The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
The iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new edition of Between the Links. Welcome back. It is a Thursday, and there's a lot going on in the combat sports world this weekend. We couldn't really narrow down the topics. There's a lot of movement, a lot of traveling going on, so many events. So we decided, you know what? Let's turn the programming back over to the viewers. You will control what we're just going to discuss. And who better to bring on for this venture than the man who ran one of my all-time favorite shows in the MMA space, the A-Side Live Chat. We're sort of bringing it back for an episode under a different name. But in my heart of hearts, this is an episode of the A-Side Live Chat. So who better to bring on than the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Jose Youngs. Jose, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It's nice and warm and sunny. It is 72 degrees here in downtown Phoenix. I can't complain. I would much rather be in Hawaii. I am okay missing the circus that is happening in Las Vegas right now. So can't complain. The Red Sox are terrible, but I digress. The Celtics are amazing. The Boston Bruins will probably never lose a game for the rest of their lives. So all is well.
Well, they lost last night, but hopefully that's the last one. They stunk something awful last night, and they weren't very good in game one, but still somehow escaped Boston after playing pretty poorly with a win. So I guess we'll accept that, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about MMA and combat sports. Casey doing the production from Las Vegas. Obviously, we got the big Gervonta Davis-Ryan Garcia fight. So he's getting ready. I don't know if this is, what, press conference day, Casey?
Yes, we have press conference in just a couple hours. I'm currently at the MGM Grand Media Room for the Davis-Garcia event. And yeah, it's in Radio Row. So there's about, looks like there's about, I don't know, 15, 20 little stations set up, and people are doing the interviews. Boxers are coming through. So, yeah, it's a big Mayweather-esque boxing fight week. It feels like it. It feels big.
All right. Yes, and Jose will be part of a preview show we'll be doing for the Davis-Garcia fight. So look for that wherever you find all of our programming. So that being said, throw your questions in the chat. Casey will throw them up on the screen. Jose and I will discuss. What do we got, Casey? What's our first topic slash question of the program?
All right. One second.
Happy holidays. Oh, yes. Yes, happy 420. for those who celebrate. Say, I
guess. Speaking of the A side, we had a very memorable episode on April 20th. I want to say it was 2020, might have been 2021. I can't quite remember, but it was me, AK, and the late Elias Theodoro did one on April 20th where he showed us his pyramid bong, which was a trip.
I remember that episode. Forgot it was on 420. Let's see. Forrest Daniels, why can't the UFC come to Hawaii when Bellator has been there numerous times? That's probably
why.
Not the right people to ask this question, but Jose, please.
Because the number that the UFC asked for is, the last I heard, is there's a site fee that the people have to pay to have the UFC there, obviously, to like for like production and everything. I don't know the technical terms of it, but the last I had heard, it was $6 million or something like that, that the government of Hawaii pays the UFC to hold an event there. And from what I had read, this was also like a couple of years ago when Max was doing his thing, so maybe things have changed, is they pulled that number because I think that's what the Pro Bowl, the NFL paid, or the Hawaii paid the Pro Bowl to happen there. So the UFC was like, that's the number. And I believe the government of Hawaii countered with a smaller number and they just couldn't come to an agreement. So it's literally just dollars and cents. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, it would be cool, obviously, to have the UFC do an event in Hawaii and have Max Holloway and some of the other Hawaiian fighters on there. But the UFC is making so much money right now. And to them, it's probably a backward step when they can make much more money elsewhere. Like, at the Apex or in Vancouver or Kansas City or other cities where they can make a bunch more money. So that's why they haven't been there. And that's it. And Bellator has been there, and good on Bellator. They've planted their flag, so to speak, in Hawaii, and that could be their spot unless things change and they can meet somewhere in the middle. But yeah, that's pretty much the answer right there.
Yeah. I think when things don't make sense, it's always just money. That's all it is.
Yeah, yeah, it's dollars and cents. Yep. That's what it usually is.
It's one of the big reasons why they're not going to Mexico right now, because they'll sell out with Brandon Moreno in Texas and they don't have to deal with holding an event in Mexico, because that is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, Texas, Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Mr. Me Seeks, do you think Sergey gets it done in round one, or do y'all see this one going into the later round? So seems like Mr. Meeseeks is confident that Sergey gets it done in round one, or maybe, I don't know. It looks like he's possibly picking Sergey here, but what do you think, Jose? Do you think, let's say over under is 7.5 minutes. We go a round and a half. Are we going over that or under that?
I'm going to say under, because both men are very violent men. Obviously, Sergey Pavlovich is, what is it, 4 or 5 TKOs, knockouts in a row. Obviously, Tai Tuivasa was on a bit of a losing streak. Derek Lewis is on a bit of a losing streak. Shamil Abdurakhimov, is that how you pronounce the last name? He's not in the UFC anymore. Maurice Green is not in the UFC anymore. And I can't even remember who is. I know he lost to Overeem in his debut. I can't even remember who he beat after that. And then obviously he had that long layoff because of visas and so on and so forth. So I don't know, because Sergey is kind of putting people away that he should be putting people away. Curtis Blaydes has been knocked out by Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis, who are two of maybe the hardest hitters in the history of the UFC heavyweight division. Those are the last two losses he's had, or those are the only two losses he's had, correct? Francis and Derek. Everyone else is kind of, I know the Tom Aspinall one was a little wonky, but he's knocked out Chris Daukaus, who should be a light heavyweight. Jairzinho, he decisions in a fight that no one remembers. Out-wrestled Volkov, melted JDS. So I'm going to say under, just because both men are pretty violent, but I could absolutely see a world where Curtis Blaydes is just like 50-44, 50-43's Sergey with wrestling.
Yeah, I think either way, this one's probably going under a round and a half. And I think we're going to know how this fight's going to go in the first minute of it. Like, Blaydes is going to shoot for a takedown early. That probably is path of least resistance, if you will. And I know things change over time, and you know, Overeem was able to take Pavlovich down and kind of keep him there, and he wasn't able to do much. And I know a lot can change since then, but I just don't have enough video evidence to show me that Pavlovich has improved drastically in that department, at least to the level where Curtis Blaydes can't be effective in that way. And we've seen Curtis kind of go in there and be like, you know what? Everyone thinks this dude can outstrike me. Watch what I can do. And then he gets knocked out by a Derek Lewis or somebody like that. But if Blaydes gets a takedown, I think it's probably going to be over shortly thereafter, because once Curtis gets on top of you, he just unloads the clip. And that's probably what's going to happen here. So I think either way, it's going to be a short night at the office. I don't think the judges are going to be needed. And if Blaydes gets him down, it's probably going to be over shortly thereafter. And if he can't, then Pavlovich has the death touch. So
he, I don't know if he has the death touch so much as that he like clips you, and then he has unbelievable killer instincts. Yes. Like, he's not a guy like Francis or Derek where he touches you and you like one punch, you're dead. It's he touches you, you go, what was that? And all of a sudden you ate seven or eight more. You know what I'm saying? It's like death by a thousand lunchboxes. So it's, yeah. Also, fun fact, I just read this morning and I wrote it down on my notes. Do you know what an ape index is, Mike?
No, I don't.
It is the ratio of one's arm length comparative to like their height. So like arm height, like arm span to like height. And it's the average person is one. Sergei Pavlovich, his ape index is 9. Which is considered to be one of, if the largest in the UFC.
Reminds me of Tony Delk, who used to mop the bench with the Celtics. His arms are like down to his ankles. He was a freak of nature in that way. But it's gonna be an interesting fight. We'll see what happens. Pavlovich is he's a scary individual, and I think Curtis would be better off just taking this fight to the mat, but what do you think these guys are fighting for, Jose? This is the weird question, because it appears, at least this is what people are saying, John Jones, Stipe Miocic, November. MSG, that's what Dana's saying. If John wins, I just don't think he's going to be like overly excited to fight either of these guys. I don't think it's just the same name value and all of that. We do have Gielton Almeida fighting Jairzinho Rozenstrike in the main event of that Charlotte card next month. I feel like unless Stipe wins, and of course we'll probably get an immediate rematch if Stipe wins, because you might as well milk that cow while you can. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like the winner of this is going to win the Gielton Almeida sweepstakes if he beats Jairzinho.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. It's just Curtis said he's willing to wait, but obviously if Stipe wins, like you said, they'll do the rematch if John wins. I'm assuming, like on a scale of 1 to 10, my confidence is a 7 or an 8 that John retires. And I don't think they're going to give Stipe, like Stipe could retire too if he loses. You get a double retirement if John wins. So there's a problem in the sense that these two men could very feasibly be fighting for a vacant title, like both of these men. This fight could have been booked for a vacant title late this year, early next year. But waiting that long, I mean, they could be, they're essentially fighting for a number one contender spot. Just a matter of who, they're either going to fight Gielton Almeida for a vacant title or, because we're all assuming Gielton beats Jairzinho, correct? You're either fighting Gielton for a vacant title. You're either somehow, if Curtis Blaydes wins and persuades John to stick around, maybe you can fight John. Maybe he could fight Stipe if John loses and gets hurt. You know, the winner of this will probably fight for a title next, just a matter of who and whether the interim title is attached to it.
That could be an option as well. We've seen worse interim title situations.
We sure have.
Brandon, will the UFC's heavyweight division be in a better spot if Jones sticks around for a few fights or if he retires after the Stipe fight? We were talking about before, but
yeah. I think MMA in general will be better if John Jones sticks around for a few more fights. Every time, like, if John wins and if he dominates Stipe like he did against Cyril, and he's just, I think after that point, the best fighter of all time, I don't think there's much of an argument. I don't want to see him right off in the sunset. Obviously, that's probably what's going to happen, but he's the greatest ever, and I don't want to see Mike Trout retire after next year, and I sure don't want to see John Jones retire after November.
I feel like if John wins, like Stipe will be done. Like he'll just be like, all right, I'm cool. Like I think Stipe would be cool just not fighting at all, but fighting John Jones at MSG for the heavyweight title doesn't get much bigger than this. That's one that'll get you off the couch. John, I think Stipe will be like retired. John will be like MMA retired, where it's just like, I'm just going to sit out and wait to see if something interesting happens. And just looking at the current landscape of the division, like let's just say Jelton just starts running roughshod over everybody, wins a vacant title, and then defends it like three or four more times in dominant fashion. Maybe John will see a challenge there. Maybe Jelton will be over in a bigger way. Maybe that'll entice John to come back and try to slay the dragon. The other thing honestly, if John wins, and John's a pretty smart guy. If he goes out there and melts Stipe, I think he might go with, listen, I have one option on the table and only one. Dana, get on the phone with Francis. Let's do this. Otherwise, I'm gone. I think he would. I think he'd do another one if they can get that done. Now, can these all parties agree to terms, and will Dana take his feet out of the sand in order to get Francis back? Will Francis meet the UFC halfway or less than halfway in order to get back? I don't know. But I think, honestly, if John beats Stipe, he's going to call out Francis, try to get that fight. And if he can't, then, he'll just watch from home until something big comes along.
Yeah, money talks with John at this point in his career, and the only one that's getting him off the couch is probably Francis, unless, because there's no big, like, it's the problem with, and it's not, when I say problems, because Francis can do whatever he wants, all the big stars Francis could fight are in the UFC, like the ones with the most drawing power. There's no Kayla Harrison or Michael Chandler out there where it's like, oh, this guy's going to be a free agent, let's get him in the UFC. It doesn't exist in the heavyweight division. Obviously, there's a bunch of like rugs and what's that guy's name? Who's the Pujanowski. Like obviously those.
Oh, Pooch would be ridiculous.
But like that's never going to happen. Those would be big draws, but it wouldn't be. I guess the only thing that I could see that would definitely throw a wrinkle is if they do the July card in London. Obviously, Leon says he doesn't want to fight there, and Tom headlines that and wins. Tom Aspinall could be fighting for a vacant title very quickly, and he is supremely talented. I wouldn't hate if Curtis wins and Tom wins, or if Jelton, any of these three, Sergey, Jelton, Curtis Blaydes fights Tom for a vacant title, especially if Tom beats Marcin Cabrera. Like, I know that fight's not official, but that's the fight that he wants, and I'm assuming that's the fight that's going to get made for that London card. It would be fun, any of those fights. Tom is supremely confident he can also beat John Jones. From the various conversations I've had. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Tommy Aspinall, maybe they just do Tommy Aspinall versus Jelton Almeida and they just skip over the winner of this fight on Saturday. Jeez Louise.
It's Curtis Blaydes, so anything's possible.
And I think people underestimate like what Curtis does. Like I think the Jairzinho fight kind of just sticks to people's minds that he's like the boring wrestler or whatever, but go look at his Tapology page, go look at his resume. He finishes like most dudes he fights pretty emphatically. So maybe you could do that here.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down. And new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Jose, question for you. Does Patchy win? And if so, how good would he do in the UFC?
I think Patchy will win. And I think he's doing just fine in Bellator. Like, the Bellator bantamweight division is right there on par with the UFC's bantamweight division. I mean, if Patchy was the champion of Bellator and you toss him into the UFC, he's a guy that you could give a title shot to right away. You know, obviously, Aljamain and O'Malley, like, if he was thrown into the landscape now, he'd have to probably fight someone like an Umar. They'll probably give him like Umar or something like that to give him like a real test, or a Merab. Either which, I don't think he would get dominated by either one. Patrick Mix is so good at MMA. Rofion Stotts is also, this is the best fight of the weekend, not counting Tank Garcia. Actually, even counting Tank Garcia, I think this is the most competitive fight of the weekend. It's the best 135 fight of the weekend, that's for sure, because Tank and Garcia 135. Yeah, Patchy Mix is awesome. Top 7 bantamweight in the world for sure. If he beats Rufion Stotts, throw him right into the top 5. He is supremely talented. Rufion Stotts obviously is very good at wrestling, as we saw, like Danny Stabs maybe laid the blueprint of how you can find some success, but Patchy Mix is also a very good wrestler who just hunts submissions. And Rofion Stotts, is how many losses is he? Only has one loss, right? And that was to Merab.
To Merab, the spinning back fist or whatever.
That's right.
In that fight.
That's right. And then Patchy's only loss is to Juan Archuleta, who Rofion Stotts melted. So these are very clearly two, I can't even say the two best, because Sergio obviously is out there. Kyoji Horiguchi could always come up to 135. And Patricio Pitbull is not 135. And any one of those guys. Oh, man, 135 is so fun. 135 is so fun.
It is.
But I'm picking Patchy to win. I'm picking Patchy to win.
I like Patchy as well. A lot has to do with the Danny Sabatello fight, because I think Patchy will be able to get takedowns. I think he'll be able to get on top. I think he'll be able to do more than Danny Sabatello was able to do. And I just think Patchy, I think he's just clicking now. Like, I think like a lot of the questions we had about Patchy is his mind right? Can he reach the potential people seem to see for him? Will he make weight? Will he miss weight? I think a lot of those questions are, at least right now, kind of things of the past. And I thought he looked incredible against Horiguchi. I thought he, whatever a step above incredible is, I think he was that against Magomed Magomedov in a fight that I thought was going to be super duper competitive. But Patchy was like, nope, this ain't going to be competitive at all. This fight's great. But I think Patchy,
that was,
yeah,
his submission over Magomed was my number two for submission of the year last year.
It's a good pick. Likewise. It's a very good pick.
I also had that at my top three, I think, too. It was,
that was number two incredible. For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put him to sleep. The only problem is it was like the last fight card of the year, and it got overshadowed by UFC Fight Week. So just no one really talked about it. It was also the co-main event.
Yeah. It was a great pick. We'll see what happens. I love that fight. Can't wait to see it. Forrest Daniels, what do you guys think about Bobby Green bringing $60,000 cash to the media day? Yes, that was pretty fun. Also, what do you think about his new name, King? So I didn't dig into this completely. Is his name just going to be King? Like, yeah. No last name? It's just going to be
like, what? I think it might be King of- Green. King, no, Green?
He,
I don't know.
He just said King, like Madonna.
Okay.
Just King. Yeah. I was looking at it today. Cool. Yeah.
Love it.
Bruce Buffer's going to say, fighting out of this thing, weighing at 155, King? That's incredible.
What would be great is if he kept the King nickname, so it was just King King.
King King! I love that. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I love it. I love weird people.
Bobby Green is like, I feel like he's... Jed and I talked about this before. He's just so close. I feel like he's so close to like we saw Masvidal did in 2019.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah, and I feel like if anybody can recreate that magic, I feel like it's Bobby Green. But every time we feel like he's there, comes up just a little short, gets knocked up by Drew Dober. Although I think he's got a very good chance to beat Jared Gordon. I think it's a competitive fight, but I think I understand why Bobby Green's such a heavy favorite, but is this the year, Jose, that Bobby Green gets over the hump and the next media days or two media days from now, instead of bringing $60,000 cash, he's bringing like 150 cash?
If Bobby Green beats Jared Gordon and then beats Paddy Pimblett, then I think we could very much see that happen. Because
Paddy would take that fight?
I think so. Well, I don't think Patty's the type of guy. Patty is not the type of guy to say no to fights. He seems to really want to fight Jared Gordon because of things that were said and how the last fight played out and everything. But I don't think the UFC is in the – they've never really done that. Like, oh, I want to run this – like, they did it with Usman because Masvidal was the moneymaker. So they get Usman beat Burns, and then he called out Masvidal even though he just beat him to, like, silence the critics. But Jared Gordon is not Jorge Masvidal. You know, like, unless Jared Gordon just throws like a fly, like a rolling thunder, knocks out Bobby Green, gets on the mic and is like, oh, I'm going to scalp you and drink your blood. And then we can talk. But if Bobby Green wins, I would honestly pick Bobby to beat Patty Pimblett. Then we could, yeah. I could absolutely see a world where Bobby Green is all of a sudden must see television. Like, he's the guy, like, he's the new Jorge if he beats Jared and Patty back to back.
If he goes out there and just finishes Jared, it's a good start. It's a good start.
See, people say that, but can you? How many times does Bobby Green get finishes?
Ally Quinto.
Yeah, but that was it. Like, if you look at, because I remember I asked him this. He beat Al in November 2021 because that was the MSG card. And it was, I want to say, 7-8 years between TKO finishes for him. Like, essentially Jorge Masvidal. Everyone's talking about how Jorge was this killer on the feet. Knocked out Darren Till, obviously knocked out Ben Askren, and then got the cut against Nate Diaz. But before that, how many guys was he knocking out? He was fighting to a lot of decisions. He was winning decisions, yep. But he was fighting to a lot of decisions. Bobby Green does not get stoppage wins. He does in before the UFC, but in the UFC, he does not. He had about 7-8 years between TKO wins. But
first
every
UFC
one of his
fights, he got finishes.
Right.
But then
but
8 years.
Every one of his fights is so fun to watch. So no one cares. Like, he is already, like, to me, he's already must-see TV in terms of his actual fight. But in terms of the mass and, like, media days and press conferences, he beats Jared and Patty back-to-back. He's there.
Love it. Do it, Bobby. Do it.
Plus, love me a head tattoo. I've been thinking of getting one myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Any design thoughts?
You'll see.
Oh. So this is going to be a thing.
It'll eventually happen. I just got to figure out who will do it and when I want to do it because it takes a long time to heal. Because I also want to get my hands tattooed, and that's a 6-week healing process. So I need 6 weeks of no travel.
Okay. We have things to look forward to. Bobby Green, Patty Pimblett, and Jose head and hand tattoos. Joseph, thoughts on Amran Tsarukyan, Beneil Dariush agreeing to fight each other at UFC 288, but the UFC said no. Does Dana need DuBronx versus Dariush? Because in his mind, UFC 289 will suck. That fight is not done yet. Seems to be what the UFC wants to do, and that card could really use a Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush fight. But it's not that long. It's a month apart, a little over a month after 288, so... Is Oliveira going to be ready in time to do this? Said he hasn't been even to really train for Dariush for 288. He had the injury. I guess he's going to try next week to see how it all pans out. But I don't know. Tsarukyan Dariush, like, good on Dariush for saying yes.
Love it.
Yeah, that's a super risky fight. But good on him. But
love it. I mean,
I don't know.
Benil's a guy that, or as this person wrote, Beneil Dariush. If you watch his press conference before he fought Gamrot, someone asked him, like, why do you, like, you could be fighting a much higher ranked guy than Mateusz Gamrot, who is supremely dangerous. And Beneil was just like, I just like to fight and I don't particularly care who it's against, which I love. He's a guy that doesn't matter. Like, he obviously he cares about getting to the title, but I think he just wants to fight. He has a new baby. I think he's about to have his wife is about to have another new baby. Needs that money. So, I mean, if he should just get the title shot, like, meritocracy wise, yeah. Just have him fight Islam in Abu Dhabi. That should have been the case to begin with. He shouldn't even have to fight Charles Oliveira. But if he fights, if he's down to clown against Armin Tsarukyan or Dustin Poirier in June, July, then man, just give that man a fat paycheck.
Love the Poirier idea. But I don't know. I don't know. He even said, like, in all the interviews he did, that when he said, okay, I'll just take the title shot, the UFC said, no, Dustin Poirier is the number one contender. Which I'm not really surprised at, just because Poirier is a star and the fight with Chandler was insane. And but we'll see. I mean, I think Dariush played this right. And it looks like if this fight doesn't happen June 10th, that Dariush will end up getting the title fight. So it's kind of a win-win for Dariush. Right. He either gets to fight Charles Oliveira in a big spot on a pay-per-view to earn his shot, or he gets it anyways. So it's in a pretty good place. But yeah, he should just get the friggin' title shot and let's move on. Yeah, that card really needs it. Aaron's MMA picks. Yeah, what? I'm sure we'll talk about the mystery co-main event at some point, but what do you all think about Gilbert calling out Dustin, a 155er, and Bilal asking for a catch weight? Feels like this hurts their argument for a title shot. So I guess we could kind of parlay this into the UFC 288 co-main event mystery box, which is under lock and key, and no one can seem to penetrate it or get it open at all. Gilbert wants that spot. Seems like he's kind of cryptic on social media. Bilal asking for a catch weight, and now Gilbert is saying, oh, now he wants to fight at 170 now. Money, money, money. Then he called out Dustin, and Dustin said, I could do it, but I'm not really in fight shape, but money talks. And now Paulo Costa's been out saying things, and Jan Błachowicz is like, no, they offered me the fight. I said yes, you said no. I don't know, man. But what do you think about where Gilbert stands in all of this and just this mystery co-main event that the UFC is apparently planning for May 6th that nobody knows about?
I mean, props to Gilbert, Dustin, Bilal, if true, and all those guys that are willing to step up and fight on super short notice and risk their spot, especially Gilbert and Bilal. If Gilbert and Bilal fight at 170, that is a massive risk. I love that fight as a fight, and the winner of that undoubtedly deserves the title shot over Colby Covington. But I don't like seeing, like, Bilal is in the same category as Beneil. He should be fighting for the title now. Like, he deserves the title shot next. Gilbert is probably one win away. So I realistically, Bilal should have the title shot. Gilbert should be fighting Colby Covington for the number one contender spot. I don't want to see Gilbert and Bilal knock one of the other off, because then we'll have a Curtis Blaydes Sergey Pavlovich situation all over again, or we'll have a Charles Oliveira, Beneil Dariush, or we'll have a Max Holloway, Arnold Allen all over again, where you're just knocking off a future contender for a champion that needs opponents. So props to everyone involved, especially Dustin, who is not even remotely linked to a fight and is down to clown if the money talks, rightfully so. I would have loved to see Jan versus Paulo Costa. Never thought that fight was even remotely possible until they started tweeting. But at the same time, I don't want to lose out on Paulo versus Khamzat. So if Paulo needs to get to 185 in November, fight Khamzat for that number one contender spot, don't want to lose out on that. But props to everyone involved for willing to step up, especially if they're making all that money.
So I was told by some folks that Paulo fighting on this card, like him saying that, pretty legit. There are names that were thrown out, other middleweights that were thrown out, and the big talking point and the big holding pattern was, let's just do it at 205. Like, who gives a shit? Let's just do it at 205. And apparently the UFC was like, no, it has to be at 185, which to me is so weird. Because even like even the Gilbert Bilal thing is like, who gives a shit if they make 171? Like, if they fight at a catchweight of 175 or 180, like, are we really going to be like, well, this has no merit on the welterweight division because they're fighting at 175? It just seems so bizarre that the sticking point is like, we have to do it at the weight class, when you just have two dudes who are down to fight that the fans would be happy to watch fight. Like, I don't understand why the weight classes and making the exact weight for it is such a big deal, but I'm not a matchmaker. I don't run the UFC. It just seems kind of weird that we could get these fights, but it's only the only way we can close the deal is if they fight at 185 or 170. It just seems weird. I'm hoping that because of the time and the apparent desperation to get a co-main event on this card, which Jessica Andrade, John Jonan is a pretty fine main co-main event. We've seen way worse, if we're being honest. So I don't know. I don't know why this is such a sticking point.
And I don't want Dustin to take it because I don't want to lose out on Dustin Gaethje too.
Yeah. I still think we can get that fight though. Luke, does Garcia have what it takes to win by decision versus Davis? And do you think that's the smartest game plan as instead of going for the KO versus Tank? Now you're going to be doing a preview show on this, but early thoughts on this fight. It's a very good fight, obviously. I'm surprised Gervonta is as big of a favorite as he is. Cause I think
why?
It just seemed minus minus 245 or whatever he is.
Right on the money. Yeah, right on the money. I think Ryan Garcia is so talented. I just don't think he's there. The hype to the talent is not comparable right now, which is fine. That like this fight is happening because they're the two most popular fighters in the division. They're the two most outspoken. They're both like the fight does make sense. It's not like one of these fights that like, oh, they're just doing it to make money. This fight, it kind of checks all the boxes and it has every generation of, it has new fight fans that discovered boxing because of YouTube. It has old fight fans that follow the Mayweather promotion. Ryan Garcia has been an internet darling for his entire career. Like even like I was going like, do you know how on Facebook memories, it'll like show you like old posts and videos that you posted. There was a video on my Facebook 11 years ago about Ryan Garcia. Like that's how much this guy has, like he's really the first boxer that came in on this YouTube wave and just took it and ran with it and did it right and built it. Now you can agree or disagree with building your fight, but that he's this new generation's face of boxing. Him, Logan Paul, all these guys. He's a good looking kid. He has viral moments. He knows how to work the camera. He's a good interview. He's got the last name Garcia, so the Mexican fans will follow him. He had Canelo in his corner for a bit, not really anymore. Oscar De La Hoya is obviously there, has the rivalry with Mayweather promotions and this and that. But saying all of that, Tank Davis is just better. He is just simply better. I don't know if you watched Tank Davis's last fight. And yes, he has all the issues out of the ring, which you cannot overlook because he's not the best human being when it comes to, you know, being a significant other. But everything that Tank Davis does just is Ryan Garcia's foil. Like Ryan Garcia looks really good when he hits pads. Pads don't hit back. You don't have to worry about an uppercut from hell from Tank Davis. I don't need to get all into this because we're going to do a preview show, but I'm very confident when I pick Tank Davis. But at the same time, this fight makes sense. This is not a money grab fight. This is the biggest fight since Wilder Fury. 135 rules, but I don't even like if you take all the 135ers, like everyone in this division, like Davis and Haney, Lomachenko, Shakur Stevenson, Ryan Garcia, George Kambosos, sort of, I know he lost twice to Devin Haney. And if Teofimo Lopez can drop back down after that loss to Kambosos and add him in, if you take all those guys and put him in an actual tournament, I think Ryan Garcia comes out at the bottom in terms of wins and losses. He'll have the most people watching him, though, if that makes sense. Shakur Stevenson and Devin Haney probably come out on top, but Tank Davis, talking about a 135er that can melt you, Tank Davis is the guy. He's so good at boxing. And I think people underestimate his fight IQ, because if you watch that last fight, and I'm getting way too into this, even though we're going to do a preview show.
Love it.
The last thing I'll say on this is, everyone keeps saying, like, oh, is he overlooking Ryan Garcia? Is he not taking this seriously? Tank Davis's team will not allow that. In the middle of his corner in his fight before the finish went up to him. I can't remember who it was. They were like, Tank, you're losing. You're losing this fight. And Tank was like, what do you mean? Like he argued with his coach. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, Tank, you're losing. And Tank, literally, you can see the flip, the switch in coming out. And then he just uppercut and knocked him out. Tank Davis is that guy. I think I am so confident when I pick Tank Davis to win.
It's going to be a good one. Davis's length, his reach. I don't know if he, I just don't know if he can keep,
Tank Davis.
I just don't know if he could stay away from Tank for the entire fight. It's a dangerous proposition.
Yeah, and he's really fast. The hydration clause obviously helps Tank Davis, and Ryan Garcia throws a lot of looping punches and leaves his head way up high. Tank Davis, there are moments where but at the oh my god, at the same time, Tank, when he throws, there are punches, if you watch in a slow motion, where both of his feet are off the ground. Like, he just hums that thing in. Can't do that against Ryan Garcia either. No, you'll eat about 7 punches if you do that.
And when Gervonta Davis rib roasts, oh, it's brutal, man.
Even Garcia, so that's even nasty. Ryan. That's Ryan Garcia's when he jabs and then comes in with the hook, and then you're just like, oh, broken ribs. And then he does it again, and then you block your ribs, and he goes pop, pop, right to the face, and all of a sudden you can't see where you are. Oh my god, this is gonna be such a fun fight, but Tank should win.
Okay, Saturday night, we have boots on the ground. Yes. You think Davis versus Haney is the fight to make if Davis wins?
Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes. Or Shakur Stevenson or anyone. Obviously, Devin Haney has a hurricane that is Vasyl Lomachenko in front of him.
Yep.
Lomachenko, I am very nervous that the pandemic took us, we got robbed of his best years because he's so good. At one point in time, he was the most talented boxer in the world. I'm afraid that the pandemic, the Teofimo Lopez, the injury and all that stuff robbed us of his best years. But yes, that is the fight.
So remember how you said earlier, this is completely off topic, when we were talking about the main event for Saturday of the UFC, that Chris Daka should be a light heavyweight?
Mm-hmm.
You got your wish, Jose.
There you go.
June 10th, Chris Daka going to light heavyweight. And boy, is he getting a welcome. Khalil Roundtree, UFC 289. UFC just unveiled. How about that?
So the guy that knocks people out is fighting a guy that likes to get knocked out. Oof, tough task.
Wow. Okay.
Over under on that reach. Over under on that fight reaching the third round.
It'd be like plus 300 that it gets to the third round.
Right. It's a tough.
But it depends on which Khalil shows up. That's true. We get that, the mangler?
Bangkok ready. Oh, Roundtree.
Yeah. Yeah. If we get that guy, no chance this goes to the third round. The guy who fought Eric Anders and Modestus Bukauskas. Boy, oh boy. What's next for Alexander Rakic? Maybe Alex Pereira. Maybe, that's the real test for Alex. Because Alex going 205. Could that be the one?
I like that fight as a fight, but I think Rakic was, if he had beaten Jan, he would have gotten the title shot. Again, I just don't want to see these guys knock each other off because I want both of these guys to fight for the title at some point. We're all obviously Jamal versus Yair is the fight that will happen. And after, maybe, because this seems to be the next logical fight in terms of contenders, right? Because Alex was right there before the leg injury. Maybe. I guess it really depends on when Yuri comes back. Because if Yuri has a setback and he's like, oh, I won't be ready till next year, just make Alex and Jamal Hill. Because their storyline.
That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's the story is there. He beat up his coach. They have how many cameras are pointing at the octagon of Alex Pereira just burning a hole through Jamal Hill's head after that win? It just depends on when Yuri's ready.
Because I feel like that's half the reason why Pereira's is moving up right now. Like, I know that weight cut sucks, but still, you're on the precipice of a massive trilogy fight with your longtime rival. The UFC would certainly put together, and just immediately after losing to Izzy, it's just automatically 205, and then 3 days later, I'm up to 205. That was my whole thing, is like, I don't think maybe the UFC was right about Yuri all along, that this is the worst shoulder injury they've ever seen. And maybe Yuri was just so incredibly optimistic about everything.
Right.
Like maybe perhaps too optimistic that maybe he won't come back before the end of the year. And is anybody going to shell out $80 to watch Jamal Hill fight Magomed Ankalaev? I don't think so.
Oh my God. I forgot about Ankalaev.
That's maybe the problem.
Maybe Alex and Ankalaev. And then, because I'm
I don't want to see that.
maybe Jan goes down, right? Because Jan said he wanted to go down to middleweight. So I'm going to strike him. I'm looking at our rankings right now. I'm striking him. Anthony Smith is obviously fighting Johnny Walker. I know Ratchik has a win over Anthony Smith, but Ratchik was also down to rematch Anthony Smith when Anthony Smith went on that run. Krylov is out there. So I feel like the winner of Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker could either fight Ankalaev or Ratchik and then just give Alex the other one.
Yeah.
And then in this perfect world, Yuri and Jamal fight in, I don't know. In a perfect world, Mike, in a absolutely perfect world for the both of us.
Say it.
Yuri fights Jamal Hill in Boston in August and Alex Pereira fights fill in the blank in the co-main event. Because he's right there near Danbury, Connecticut with Glover Teixeira. And then Rob Font can fight Peter Yan. What a great time that would be. The Boston Red Sox will have not lost a single game since today. We'll be in first place.
We'll have multiple parades for the Bruins and Celtics. Boston will be buzzing.
Shohei Ohtani will be well on his way to Boston too. One kid dream.
I love that. He likes Boston. He likes it a lot.
I mean, if you're not in the American League East, I can't say that because Adam Jones really, I mean, there's players like Adam Jones and Torrey Hunter really hate Boston, rightfully so.
That's true. Yeah, Torrey really hates Boston. He's a meme forever, or at least his legs and his feet are.
Torrey Hunter is a jabroni, so.
True. Why is the UFC so hell-bent on a division fight when Conor could fight at any weight for a lightweight title shot? I can see him versus Chandler at 170 after they coach tough. I don't know.
What is this question? Why is the UFC so on a division fight? Oh,
I think they're talking about Gilbert kind of not fighting exactly at 170. This is in reference to that. Sorry.
I see. Conor kind of supersedes divisions. I think he's like one of those rare guys that's like, oh, I'm going to fight at 170. The UFC is like, okay. I also like Bilal Muhammad and Conor McGregor just don't have the same drawing power, unfortunately. Also, Bilal Muhammad saying he could have made 170 overnight for London and now saying like, oh, I want to fight. I want to catch weight. It's not the best look, I guess. Maybe the UFC is a little frustrated with it because he talked all that talk and now he doesn't want to make 170. I don't know. I'm speculating. But
it's
at the
Ramadan
end of the day,
too. So
that is an excellent point. That is an excellent point.
Which is why I don't think doing it at 171 means anything. You can just do it at 180 or 175. It's the same friggin' fight. It's the same damn fight. Will you guys do a fan meetup at UFC 288? No, we will not.
I won't be there.
Jose will not be there. I was going to try to get out there Friday, but that's not happening either. I will be there Saturday for the watch party, but no meetup for 288. Maybe we'll figure something out. If I can get to Vegas, maybe we'll do something for 290. Maybe.
Maybe Conor Burks will come.
Maybe he will. Question for both of you. Who will enjoy this national holiday more so today? I'll say for sure.
Not me.
I mean, true.
My days are gone. My days are no longer there, as Mike knows.
It will not be I either. Parent stuff and yeah, no. I'd be too reckless.
You know what? The answer is Casey Lydon. Because every day is April 20th in the Lynn Lydon household.
Incredible. What else we got?
Actually, we've kind of answered all the good questions. Come on, kids. All right, here we go.
Favorite walkout songs?
Is this our favorite walkout songs for that fighter, like it's a perfect fit, or just songs in general?
And where does Headstrong by Trapped rank after Israel Adesanya?
I had to move him down the rankings for that.
Wow, I can't remember who. Was it Katsunori Kukuno walked out to We Are the World?
Ooh, I'm not
Funny. That was very funny because it caught everyone off guard. I liked that. I liked BJ Penn's. I mean, Yoshihiro Akiyama has like the best ever.
It works perfect for him.
It works so well, especially. But the problem is, it doesn't work in the UFC. It works great for Pride
on that big stage, and they take their time. Everyone bows, and they bring out the whole team. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
and the pedals are falling behind him, and you're just like, what? It's like the entrance is longer than the fight.
It's the best.
He's the best ever, and he's just a beautiful man.
So true.
Tai Tuivasa's got a bunch of good ones.
Oh, you know what? I changed my – for a long time, my favorite was BJ Penn's because, like, people just got, like, really hyped. But seeing – being in the arena when Alex Volkanovski walked out in Perth to I Come From a Land Down Under, oh, my God. I have never in my life – felt a building shake so much, and seeing and just absolutely hammered Israel Adesanya and Tai Tuivasa singing along on their standing on their chairs was such a delight. And then immediately when Islam came out, and just you could, like, me and Oscar Willis were sitting next to each other, we couldn't hear, we were like inches apart, we couldn't hear each other because of the booze. That's my answer. Look, it might be recency bias, but I have never, like, it was comparable to when Nate Diaz submitted Connor, when the building was going bananas. That was my answer. Is Volkanovski Come From Land Down Under?
I want to throw one out.
Is
there.
He walking out? Oh, go ahead.
I want to throw one out because I think people forgot about how awesome her walkouts were. Ronda Rousey walking out to Joan Jett's Bad mm-hmm. Reputation. Unbelievably perfect song for her, although she actually did care about Reputation, but that's beside the point. Her walking Bad Reputation, when that hit, it, and Ronda was at her prime. Oh my God, like that was there's a handful of times I was so glad to be in the arena to experience that. That was one of those times.
Izzy walking to Undertaker theme was pretty good. I like that one.
Yeah.
276.
Meh.
You didn't like it? I was like, I was not ready for that.
I mean, I liked it because I love professional wrestling, but like, it just, I don't know. Read the room, bro. That's how I felt.
I'm kind of opposed down. I enjoyed the ambition from Izzy, yes. But yeah.
I understand what he was doing. I really appreciated trying something new. I'm obviously, I really like Izzy as a fighter. We're pretty okay friends, but like, there were much better WWE songs that he could have. Like, if he walked out to Triple H's song and did like the water thing and everything, then I would have been hyped for a fist fight.
Triple H was sitting front row for that, wasn't he? Because they, was that the Money in the Bank card? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that would have been crazy. That would have been awesome.
Vince, Stephanie, and Triple H were all there.
And McAfee, right?
Yeah. Say it again.
McAfee was there too, right?
Probably.
That was an eclectic bunch.
Is he going to walk out to Cena? I forgot what the song's called. The John Cena song.
My time is up. Yeah, my time is now.
Yeah.
Did you know John Cena? Do you know John Cena is a platinum album? His one album he put out is platinum, and it actually has some bangers on it. It's unbelievable. I interviewed John Cena. Yeah, I interviewed John Cena once in my life, and I introduced him as platinum recording artist John Cena, and he couldn't stop laughing. I go, I didn't mention WWE at all. I go, I'm here with platinum recording artist John Cena. And he was just like, what the hell? He was good, man. He had some rhymes. He had some rhymes.
Okay, I liked his first. I liked his first theme song before the Thugonomics. The other one, yeah.
Yeah, you think you're untouchable? That was a good one.
It was good stuff.
John Cena is one of those wrestlers I hated for so long, but now I actually love him. Like, he went to the other side.
There was a time, I know no one cares about pro wrestling, but when he was the U.S. champion and he was doing the U.S. Open Challenge, and that's how like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and everyone kind of debuted, when it was his, I'm just going to do whatever I want in the ring, That Casey, did you watch professional wrestling at the time?
Around what time?
When John Cena was the U.S. champion, he was doing the open challenge. This is a moment when he just did whatever he wanted. Like, I remember he did a standing Hurricane Rana on CM Punk, and everyone, like, there was no reaction in the crowd because everyone was like, "What the hell was that?" Like, they were literally speechless because it wasn't set up. He just jumped up in the air. A 280-pound man jumped up in the air and threw his legs around another man. There was no spring. There was no help. He just jumped 10 feet in the air, and then the Hurricane Rod at CM Punk. It was unbelievable.
Cena had some banger matches, man. Gontra, that was great. Zero Gone, that might be the actual winner.
He didn't walk out to Still Tipping. He walked out to, when did he walk out to, Casey? It was another Houston song.
Yeah, it wasn't. You're right, I don't know. Was it a Paul Wall song?
I don't remember, but he, because obviously Derek Lewis walked out to Fat Pat,
but it was a Houston rapper. I can't exactly remember.
Because the crowd started to cheer, and then they went, "Yeah, boo!" when he walked out. That was great, and then he was laughing.
I thought it was Still Tipping.
It might.
No, it was not.
Okay. Is that my, okay? Well, either way, he. Gon did troll the audience, but Gon insists that he wasn't trolling. He loves Houston hip hop, so maybe it was still funny.
Houston's never been my favorite hip hop scene, but they have been around forever, so all respect.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see what else we got.
We'll go another five minutes or so. See if we have another question or two.
I'm trying to. We have a lot of music suggestions and pro wrestling stuff. I'm trying to get back to MMA.
We can go that route.
I'm gonna try to find out what this walkout song was.
Thoughts on Imovov Curtis announced for UFC 289. Yeah, so we reported that fight yesterday, and it's a good fight.
Huh? He did walk out to Still Tipping.
He did.
Yeah, you're right. I was mistaken.
What do you think of Imovov Curtis?
It makes sense because in our rankings, Imovov is what I think 15-14, and Chris Curtis is right outside the top 15. Ranking wise, it makes sense. Chris Curtis is really mad at the world, right? This reminds me of when Anthony Smith lost to John Jones and then immediately took a fight against Alexander Gustafsson when he probably shouldn't have. And he was like, remember, he was just like real agitated at the presser. Remember, he's like, "I'm going to punch a hole through Luke Rockhold's face and this and that." It reminds me of that. It's just not a main event. So I'm probably going to pick Chris Curtis because he's a very agitated man. Plus his training partner, Sean Strickland, kind of put the blueprint out on how to beat Imovov.
Yeah, I think Imovov's best path to victory is probably getting this fight to the ground, and Chris is very hard to take down. So
the hardest. He's never been taken down.
I'm interested because even Strickland said that Imovov made a big mistake by accepting that fight at 205. And yeah. Strickland definitely used his weight advantage in it. So this fight being back at 185, I'm interested. I'm gonna kind of give Imovov a mulligan on that last fight.
Yeah, I'm not viewing that as a win or a loss for either man. But Chris Curtis is also not the biggest middleweight.
No, yeah, so, exactly.
He's a guy. He's not a guy that will use his weight. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Be exciting fight.
Fun fight though. Makes sense. Very middleweighty fight.
How's the nose, Casey?
Having a broken nose is not fun, but the timing of it was great because I've been in Vegas all week and I'll be here for a few more days. So it has kept me out of the gym. So it is healing up and I think it's healed up till my nose itches. Then I touch it and I go, "Oh, nope, not healed." one of those type injuries.
I've never once broken my nose. That I know of. I am confident it has happened. I just didn't go to the doctor.
Yeah. Haven't gone to the doctor yet, but hopefully don't have to. Just as long as I don't get it punched again anytime soon, which is that's a big ask.
Is Sadiq Youssef in our comment section, or is that just a guy pretending to be Sadiq Youssef?
I don't know. That's why I haven't put the I can't confirm that Sadiq, so I don't want to throw that up there. But people are, because anyone can just, you know, put their name out there.
That'd be pretty amazing. The best fight breakdown man in MMA.
Oh, he's good.
And a guy. And a guy that him and I have been talking about doing anything but fighting episode for a minute. The problem is he's all the way in Maryland.
That'll be
and
good
every
one.
Time I and every time I want to do one with Chris Curtis, he takes another fight. So he's in camp and stuff.
Maybe International Fight Week. What happens first, Izzy Rob 3 or Volk Max 4?
Probably Izzy That's Rob 3, but I'm not confident either happens in for a while. Because I think...
Yeah, I'm with you.
Volk's going to try to go to 155 again and challenge Islam. Izzy has Strickland, he's got DDP, and he has Hamzat. 2024 late 2024, if either happens, is probably when it'll happen.
Yeah. I'm leaning, if I have to choose one, it's Izzy Rob 3, but mm-hmm. I'm not confident either happens.
Is there anything Max Holloway can do to earn a title shot against Volk?
Just keep winning, I guess.
So he literally just had
to like
I'm kind of curious. Like, how many times does he have to beat number one contenders to get another shot? If Volk is the champ, obviously, if it's a different champ, then you know that changes. But
yeah,
I just want
chase him to 155, fight him in a new weight class.
It's not a bad idea. All right. Or just piss Volk off to the point where Volk's just like, all right, I want to fight you.
Yeah.
The ball's in his court more than likely, so. It doesn't seem like he's all that interested in that idea. Anything else? There he is.
I'm assuming.
Is that really Sadiq Youssef?
That's people are saying, so. Yeah, because that's him. So, hi, Sadiq.
What's up, guy?
The best in the business of breaking down fights. World's. You're not lying.
When you're that good at picking fights, they don't call you an expert. They call you Sadiq Youssef.
That's right. That's what the dictionary says.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what the dictionary says. Listen, I watch Sadiq's fight breakdowns more than I watch our own fight breakdowns. That just shows you how good that man is. He's changed the game forever.
He's using
science. He's using science and just doing things that have never been done before in the fight picking community. So I wonder if someone tailed Sadiq on a lot of his picks. Like, everyone just bet everything Sadiq said over since he started doing this. I wonder how much money they would have right now. Sadiq usually does pretty well. Usually picks pretty well.
Smart dude.
So Sadiq, get ready. Next time you and Jose are in the same locale, a little anything but fighting. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Also, not for nothing, he is very good at professional fist fighting.
Oh, yeah,
he is
that
very
thing.
Good at professional fist fighting.
You know, that little thing. I forgot that's what he does too. Who knew?
It's so good.
I think we're good, gentlemen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I think we're good. All right. So a lot to look forward to. Jose will get a cast assembled for the Garcia mm-hmm. Davis preview show. It will not be live. Makes millionaires every weekend. See, there you go. We'll have a preview show for the rest of the combat sports wonderfulness tomorrow, Bellator, UFC, all that good stuff, 1 p.m. Eastern. And then Saturday, it's just all sorts of craziness. We have obviously the boxing fight, we have Bellator, we got the UFC, there's influencer boxing. I mean, there's just so much stuff going on. Sunday, AK and I will be back for matchmaking on to the next one. And then I'm on vacation for a week and a half. So I don't know if the show's going to happen next week, if someone's going to take it over. Not really sure. But we do have the 2023 MMA fighting draft, which is going to drop on Sunday too. We already recorded the episode. It is magical. It is glorious. And I think you all will enjoy it just in time for the NFL draft going up next week. So, Casey, you can hit the music. There it is. Casey, enjoy the rest of your time in Las Vegas. Davis Garcia should be a hell of a fight. We'll see how it all plays out. Thank you all for joining us. I will be back on this program in 2 weeks, and we'll get you ready for UFC 288 in Newark, New Jersey. For Jose, I am Mike Heck. Big shout out to Casey on the ones and twos. Thank you, Super Dave. Back in 2 weeks on Between the Links. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.